We're going to touch on the politics, the money, and the implications on both the health and criminal justice systems, because again, there's a lot across all of those topics that need to be considered when you're talking about this. But first, I would like to introduce our panelists. I'll start over there with Christine Herman. She is a reporter for WILL and Side Effects Public Media, which is a public media collaborative that is focusing on health and science issues. Ryan Dunham is a reporter from WGLT over in Normal, Illinois, so he made the trek over this evening. We appreciate that. And Lee Gaines is a reporter both with Illinois Newsroom and WILL. So all three of them have been reporting on various aspects of the marijuana issue, including the politics, the public health, the criminal justice system, and everything in between. So there's a lot that we want to cover tonight. I think we can start with where it is that Illinois stands currently. So I think it'd be good to start off with you, Ryan, if we may. So can you give us a sense of where Illinois fits in this debate? So for anybody who doesn't know, Illinois is one of 32 states that has already legalized medical marijuana, but there are 10 states plus the district or the District of Columbia that have legalized recreational marijuana. So where do we stand as a state right now?
So we are poised to be sort of the next in line to do this. It's certainly not a guarantee that we're going to be next to legalize recreational marijuana, but we would be poised to be next. So the things that have sort of changed in the political landscape to make that possible is certainly the election of a Democratic governor, J.B. Pritzker, who's very open to the idea and supported it vocally during the campaign, continuing Democratic supermajorities in the legislature, and obviously an evolving kind of public sentiment in favor of the idea, which we can get into a little bit later. In Illinois, the need for tax revenue is obviously another factor that may kind of push us a little closer to it than maybe we would be if we were living in some other state. And then, you know, nationally, there is sort of a broader interest in criminal justice reform, and I'm sure Lee will be getting into that. So I think all of those things together are sort of the ingredients for why we may be next. It is sort of the next logical step. If we did medical marijuana in 2013, decriminalized it in 2016, this is kind of where you go next.
The next logical step, yeah. So when you're looking at the states who have already legalized recreational marijuana, they tend towards blue when you're looking at Dems versus the Republicans. So states like California, Massachusetts, Oregon, Washington. So when you're looking at Illinois and you're saying, okay, Illinois is next, how are we similar to those states and how are we different than those states?
Sure. Well, yeah. So Vermont actually earlier this year became the first state to legalize recreational marijuana through the legislature. So the way that we would do it, as you mentioned, it's other than them, it's been all through the referendums. Illinois does not have like that history of populism like the states like California have, where you turn to the ballot box to make giant public policy decisions. In Illinois, that's not even like legal. For statewide referendums are all advisory, right? So you could theoretically put an advisory question on a statewide vote to see like, what does the public think of this? But generally referendum statewide can only make like constitutional changes. They can't make statute changes like that. So I've heard from lawmakers that I've talked to that that's actually a good thing, that this is going to be decided on by lawmakers and they're going to craft the policy side of it ahead of time, as opposed to catching up to a ballot question vote.
Yeah, because that's really important to note as well. When the ballot decides it, then retroactively they have to sit down and figure out how it's going to work. And in theory, in Illinois, in our way, we have to figure out how it's going to work before we make it legal. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So earlier we did ask people to text their thoughts on this issue. You can use that same number again, 217-394-5765, to text your questions as you're thinking of them during this conversation. And hopefully we can get to them, whether that be in the panel discussion here or the Q&A after the intermission. But would you say, Ryan, when you're hearing Kristen's feedback there, does that mirror what you believe kind of the general popular thought is right now in the state?
Yeah, certainly. I think there's been a lot of polling done on this and even some actual voting. So up in Cook County earlier this year during the primary, I think it was, they took a non-binding referendum vote in Cook County, 2/3 in favor of legalizing marijuana. A poll out of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute in Southern Illinois reached basically the same conclusion. That was also in March of this year, 2/3 in favor. There was earlier this year some movement in the Senate, the state Senate, to actually put an advisory referendum on the ballot so we could have all weighed in on it and given some lawmakers some guidance. That passed the Senate but didn't get through the House, so that never happened. Nationally, it's about the same. The split changes a little bit by political party, so Pew Research did some research back in October. Republicans are divided probably the most, 45% in favor, 51% opposed. Democrats favor it more than the national average. It's kind of what you would expect a little bit on that side.
So as we mentioned, Illinois did legalize medical marijuana back in 2013. So Christine, I want to switch gears and move over to you. So who has access to it right now, and how do they get access?
Yeah, so you have to apply to the Illinois Department of Public Health, and there's a list of conditions on their website, maybe about 30 or so. Some are like cancer or PTSD. Others are like smaller conditions that maybe only affect a smaller group of people. But you need to have a doctor certify that you have a qualifying condition, and then you can apply. Some of the challenges are that, so there are, I believe, latest I checked, 39, almost 40,000 users in Illinois of the medical marijuana. It's a pilot program that's been extended a couple times, so I think it's effective through at least the end of next year. Some of the challenges I've heard from patients who have been trying to get access, it's not a prescription, but many doctors are still unwilling to sign the paperwork that just confirms that you have a qualifying condition. And so some people will, like, you know, kind of just try to search and find a doctor who will see them, who will certify their condition.
So it's not a prescription. It's not that
it's
you
not
need your doctor to say, yes, I think this is something that you need. Your doctor just needs to say, yes, you have one of these. I believe it might be 41 conditions.
Yes, right. But still, many doctors are hesitant because they feel like, from what I've heard, signing this form is like they're saying, I support you to pursue this. And if they don't, they may not want to even sign that form.
So can you speak to how that has affected the usage of medical marijuana in Illinois?
Yeah, and another thing is that it's not covered by insurance. Since marijuana at the federal level is still illegal, you need to pay cash, and so that can also be a barrier for lots of people. It's the similar thing, you know, with what you hear about recreational. People will turn to the black market to get marijuana if they want to use it for a medical condition and they're not able to get legal access through the program we have.
So in your reporting, you've talked to patients that have used medical marijuana. How has it affected them? What are their thoughts on it?
So there's lots of anecdotal stories out there, but I think I want to start by saying that there is a lot of research about medical marijuana for different conditions, and I like to look at the meta-analyses where there are scientists who've looked at 10,000 studies and then summarized where there's the strongest evidence. There's the strongest evidence for the use of medical marijuana for chronic pain, for multiple sclerosis, and for cancer, chemotherapy-induced nausea in particular. I forgot your original question here.
Oh, we were just talking about how, when you're talking to patients
in your reporting,
how has it affected them? Do they find that it's worked?
Right. So as you know, we're in the middle of an opioid crisis. So I think one of the most telling things about medical cannabis is when you hear from patients who may have been addicted to opioids or been dependent on high doses of chronic opioids for a chronic pain condition. Well, marijuana, that's one of the conditions that has the strongest evidence for the use of medical marijuana. And so, yes, I met a patient who was able to sort of wean himself off of opioids through the use of medical marijuana. And that's, you know, obviously marijuana, it's a drug, but it's a less addictive drug, and you can't overdose on marijuana. You'll hear that argument a lot. So if you can help a patient transition from an opioid to marijuana, and it also helps manage their pain, that's a potential benefit. And I've talked with patients for whom that's been a game changer for them. Yeah.
So Lee, one huge aspect of this debate is the criminal justice system. And as we know, for instance, arrests related to marijuana disproportionately affect communities of color. So historically, let's just go back and look at what that's looked like in Illinois.
Yeah, I'm actually going to take that nationally. I'm going to take that to Illinois, and I'm also going to take that to the city of Chicago because I can speak to all three. So the ACLU has done a lot of work looking at this. And so they published this report in 2013, and it looked at arrests between 2001 and 2010. And what they concluded from this nationwide arrest data was that blacks are almost four times more likely to be arrested for marijuana possession than whites. Now, they actually did that analysis on a state-by-state level. And in Illinois, blacks were more than seven times more likely to be arrested than whites. And actually, the only places where that disparity was greater was Washington, D.C. and Iowa.
And it's important to note that use is the same in both groups,
yes,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. The use, they did note that in their report, that the use among races is roughly equal. So we know that the justice system, the justice system's enforcement of marijuana is touching people of color at far greater rates than white people. And so locally, a couple years ago, I did some reporting on this in Chicago, where I FOIA'd the Chicago Police Department for their arrest data for 2016. I did this for the Chicago Reader, which has a good track record of looking at marijuana arrest data since 2011. So the takeaway from that was the overall number of arrests for marijuana possession, particularly low-level possession, so that's 10 grams or less usually, have steadily fallen. I think it was something like 22,000 arrests in 2011. And by the time I was looking at the data, it was closer to 3,000. The interesting thing about that, though, is that the racial breakdown remained the same. So in 2011, roughly 80% of the people arrested were African American, roughly 4% were white, the rest were Hispanic. And then that same racial breakdown was true in 2016 as well. The one thing that changed that actually got the police, CPD in particular, to stop arresting people for low-level possession of marijuana was statewide decriminalization, which took effect in mid-2016.
Before, I do want to get into that part of it, but do you find in those numbers, so we legalized medical marijuana in 2013, some of those numbers were before, some of those numbers were after, has it changed anything about the criminal justice system or the arrest rates or anything because of the legalization of medical marijuana, or no?
I don't think so. And I don't think so because the pool of people that have access to the medical marijuana program, particularly in the few years after it first became a reality in Illinois, was such a small group of people. And as Christine mentioned, there was a lot of there's a lot of barriers to even accessing that program. So I don't really think that that had much of an impact at all.
So getting to the decriminalization in 2016, first of all, can you just give us a brief overview of what that is? And then also, what does that mean for law enforcement?
Yeah, and I want to back up a little bit. So we passed as a state legislature, we passed decriminalization in 2016, and Governor Rauner signed that into law. Prior to that, in 2012, the city of Chicago on its own decriminalized marijuana. And this was one of the questions that I had doing my reporting, which is, okay, if they've decriminalized it, why are they still arresting people for low-level possession? And so a lot of cities have done this around the country where they made it an option. So basically, instead of arresting someone for possession of low amounts of marijuana, you could give them a ticket instead. What I found in my reporting is that Chicago police often chose to just keep arresting people. So
law enforcement still has a choice, is what you're saying?
Not now, though. In 2016, that changed. So we now have a law that basically got rid of the charges for anything less than 10 grams. So if you are caught in possession of marijuana that's 10 grams or less, you are not supposed to be arrested. You are supposed to be given a ticket by the police.
Is there any way to track whether or not that's actually happening that way?
Yes.
Okay. And
yeah. It would involve a lot of data gathering, and I have not done it yet. I left Chicago, but I think that is one avenue of concern among criminal justice reform advocates is even though we have decriminalized this, the fear is that people will be given tickets at racially disproportionate rates. And those tickets, while you're not going to prison and you're not getting a felony or a misdemeanor record, they can still have pretty negative impacts on your life.
So, Christine, if we may kind of go back to the public health side of things, you mentioned and alluded to a few of these things earlier, but what do we know about the legalization of marijuana in the public health concerns?
Yeah, so always the concern, I think the natural concern is that when you legalize a substance that it will lead to increased use and increased addiction, and that the benefits of the legalization would outweigh the potential risks. So it is still an addictive substance, and so there are some studies that have shown no increased use. So out of Colorado, if you look at the Colorado Department of Public Health's information, after legalizing, they have not seen increased use or frequency, but other studies have shown that in other places, and if you look in aggregate across the country, legalizing medical marijuana has led to increased use both among adults and among teens, which is obviously concerning. Marijuana does affect the developing brain up through age 25, which I feel like maybe a lot of people don't realize. It's not just kids, it's even into your 20s. So there are still concerns because it does come with risks. There are respiratory problems potentially. It's associated with schizophrenia and psychosis, car crashes, lagging social achievement in life, and also might be not a good idea to use while pregnant. So those are some of the concerns, that it could lead to increased addiction in other people. It might help some get off opioids, but it might lead others into addiction and potentially other types of drug use.
Well, and you mentioned earlier, too, one of the myths out there is that you can die from an overdose of marijuana. Would you say that's the general?
Well, yeah, so you can't overdose on marijuana alone, right? So it's less addictive and it's less dangerous by itself. But it's just those other concerns. You know, there's also the concern that, you know, you can get marijuana in a gummy bear form. And so if your child sees that and thinks it's candy, it's like accidental ingestion of a substance that is not good for them. And there has been, that's been one of the things that's been observed for in places where children are getting access to marijuana gummy bears and that sort of thing. So those are some of the other concerns that you'll hear from some people on the addiction treatment side and on the public health side.
And if you may, Christine, or if you will allow me, Christine got her PhD in chemistry and then came into journalism doing more health and science. So I love talking to you about these things, and I'm really excited to ask this next question, because what makes it so hard to study marijuana and get answers to these really important questions when we're looking at should we do this or not?
Yeah. So one is that it's hard to get long-term data when this is still a relatively new phenomenon. The other thing is something I mentioned, federally, it's classified as a Schedule I drug in the same class as heroin and LSD, which means that the Drug Enforcement Administration sees marijuana as having no medicinal benefit and being highly addictive. And so it's very hard to study a Schedule I drug. You can't use federal funding to study it. And so I mentioned there are thousands of studies out there, right? And there have been these meta-analyses, but you'll hear some people, especially on the anti-marijuana side, saying there's no research that shows it's effective for anything. And what they mean is there's no the gold standard of scientific evidence, the clinical trials where they have large groups of people and there's a control group and an experimental group, and then they look at outcomes over time. Yes, those are the studies that are lacking. Those are also the studies that are very, very hard to do. I've talked to some researchers who've told me about the hoops they have to jump through to try to get approval to study marijuana, not just the risks, but also the potential benefits. So it's this catch-22 where you can't study it. So then the federal government says, we can't reclassify it until there's evidence that it's beneficial, but you can't study it until we reclassify it, and then on and on.
So that's just one of the barriers, I assume, with it being illegal still at the federal level, but having states legalize it at the state level. So Lee, I'd like to go to you for this one. So 10 states now, DC also in there, legalizing recreational marijuana use, still illegal under federal law. What role does federal government play in all of this, especially if you're looking at it becoming legal in Illinois?
This is a fraught question that
You're welcome.
That tends to change depending on who is in the Department of Justice, who our Attorney General is. There was a lot of fear when Attorney General Jeff Sessions came into office because there was a worry that he would send, you know, federal agents to crack down in states that had legalized recreationally or had legalized medicinally. That did not come to pass. It actually gets to that issue of states versus federal rights. So states are saying, you know, we have the right to do this. We have the right to legalize. You can't come in here and tell us what to do, federal government. And there were raids under the Obama administration. And then there was some there was something called the Cole memo that was passed, which basically said we're going to leave states that are regulating themselves alone. And we haven't seen much of a change in that. But of course, I think the fear on the state level is that, okay, well, we'll legalize this, tax it, and regulate it. But what is to stop DEA agents from coming in here and just raiding a business? I mean, that's a huge risk that I think businesses involved in this industry are taking on because they have no guarantee that they're protected from DEA or federal law enforcement when they come into this industry in a state, despite the fact that the state has made it legal.
And sticking with the criminal justice, we talked about this earlier, marijuana arrests disproportionately affect communities of color. So what about those individuals who are already incarcerated on marijuana charges? If this gets legalized, what happens to them?
I mean, that's a big open question. There has been, I mean, that's one of the outstanding questions, even in states that have turn to legalize this, I think has been, what do you do, not just with the people who are currently incarcerated, but what do you do with the people that have felonies on their records because of this?
Right, and it affects their day-to-day
lives. I think California is a pretty good example. So not every ballot referendum that has legalized recreational marijuana has also included criminal justice reforms. California was the only one that did. It was called Prop 64. It was widely known for the fact that it was going to legalize recreational in the state. But what it also did was introduce a lot of criminal justice reforms. So I talked to a lot of state's attorneys, people in public defender's offices in California. And basically what they said was once that ballot initiative was passed, they sort of created a triage system where they immediately moved to release people from custody who are in custody on these charges and shouldn't be. And now they've just been trying to get the word out to people that are walking around with a felony record for marijuana possession to let them know that they can get that felony dropped down to a misdemeanor, and then they can get that misdemeanor expunged.